Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here in the historic Tribune Tower building on Michigan Avenue until they make us move down the road. How are you, Roger Badish?
Well, I'm doing great, Mr. Matt Bubala. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. It's Excellent. Good to see you. It's
always good to see you.
I've been saving up my pennies all week, you know.
Oh, ooh, ooh, ooh. Does that mean?
Well, yes, I'm getting pizza. You're such a child. I swear. I'm gonna get you a bed in Michael and Tommy's room so you guys can just hang out together.
Okay.
No, not for that. Because I might have to buy tacos for everybody next weekend.
Oh, that's,
remember?
Oh, yeah.
Last week here on the show.
If it lands.
We talked about, I believe it's Ting Dong 1, the Chinese space station that is out of control and hurtling back towards Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea. You just had in your news, I think, from ABC News. Now people are finally talking about it.
Right.
People are catching on.
Well, I tried to tell Patty. She said that this was the first she had heard of it. And I said, oh, we covered this last week with Matt Bubala.
They've quit doing crosstalk with the Matt Bubala show, so they're not up to date on everything else that's going on.
I don't know what to do.
Did you offend them or did I offend them? What happened?
What did we do, Roger? It's probably my fault.
There's no love.
Everyone blames me all the time.
Either a body odor thing or we said something because we offended somebody in that crew.
Is Michael
upset with you?
I don't know.
We used to cross talk.
He always has a smile on his face. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what happened either.
Well, you know, I did kind of like walk into Patty's show last week.
That's a no.
At the beginning. But I mean,
you
I've done it before.
Things in progress, Roger.
But she had like a really special super duper guest in.
Who did you want to meet?
Who did I want to meet?
Well, you said she had a super duper guest in, so you walked in there.
Well, actually, she had the super duper guest wife in.
What? Are you? Just tell me who it was.
You
have to look it up?
No.
Yeah, I hear you typing.
I'm typing stuff for Twitter. I'm going to Twitter because I'm checking on the hostage thing.
Okay.
Thank you very much, even though it's not really a hostage.
Okay.
Well, all right. So it was a Chicagoan. You didn't know who was in last week?
No.
I thought we talked about this last week. We don't do crosstalk anymore.
I don't know what's going on in the world.
God. Well, it was...
Who was in?
It was Robert Zemeckis.
Now, admit that you were lying and you had to look up the name.
No.
Admit,
I'm looking,
Roger.
Twitter is right
Roger,
here.
Roger, let's be honest.
I'm looking on Twitter.
Roger, I want honesty. You're telling me you did not just look up that it was Robert Zemeckis?
No. But I don't remember his wife's name, though.
Okay.
And she was the guest.
Why was Roberts? Did she write a book?
She did a documentary.
Oh, that's cool.
On the very first woman's lion tamer.
Now that's
like in a circus.
That's fascinating.
Extremely from like the early 1900s, like really early late 1890s, early 1900s.
So they broke the lion tamer glass ceiling many years ago. Is what you're saying?
A long time ago.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. So no, I'm back to what we were talking.
Yes.
About. Saving all my pennies because last week on the show, we were talking about the Chinese space station that is hurtling back towards Earth out of control.
Out of control.
9-ton space station,
mm-hmm.
which is actually very small for a space station. Mostly will burn up on reentry, but possible some of the engine parts will survive
mm-hmm.
and will land somewhere. And our guy was saying that the latest, and because they really don't know because it's out of control. And so it's sort of hurtling. It's not like on a trajectory where they can say this is exactly what's going to happen.
But can't they, aren't there instruments on board where they can track where it's at?
They are tracking it all the time.
Yeah.
But because it's not descending, like Mir, they controlled its descent.
Okay.
Even so, they didn't know exactly where it was going to come down. This, they don't have any control over. And because of the atmosphere, even though they have the trajectory and all these things mm-hmm. could change. So they have, like the ABC News guy said, it could reenter anywhere between Northern California and New York. And last week we were saying there's at least a shot
mm-hmm.
that the Midwest, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, could be parts
that
of where
it comes over.
That
would be right in the middle of what they're predicting.
And so last week on the show, we decided, you know, because...
You decided.
I decided. I don't get to rope you in on that, huh? Not when it comes time to pay the
Roll
bill, you
the tape.
So it was me. I'll admit it. That's fine. I said, well, you know, it's unfortunate because remember when the Mir space station was coming back in,
mm-hmm.
Taco Bell did a little thing where they threw a huge bullseye out in the Pacific Ocean. because they knew that's in general where it was coming down. And they said, if Mir hits this bullseye, free tacos for everyone. Well, there's no, we're not getting any Chinese space station love here. Nobody did that.
Yeah.
So during a commercial break last week, I had just come out. I pulled up the map and I made her close her eyes and point her finger and I moved the map all around. And then pointed at Arlington Heights.
Arlington
and we decided
Heights. If
a piece of the space station lands in Arlington Heights, survives reentry, lands in Arlington Heights, then the following weekend, I will buy tacos for everyone who is listening to the show.
Yeah. And I question the veracity of people around the area
who might just show up
who
for
are
free tacos.
Taco lovers.
Yeah. Might just spread the word, say, hey, there's free tacos.
Yeah. And get, well, and, you know, say, I found this in Arlington Heights.
Oh, right. You were worried people were going to pretend.
Right.
So
yeah.
There will have to be confirmation, space station confirmation. And our guy, who we will check in with at 4 a.m.
That's right. We got a guy.
We got our guy. We'll get an update with him at 4 a.m. on the latest. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com will tell us the latest on what they're thinking. Your news report said April 1st they're thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah.
Now, that's going to be crazy if you're getting out of Easter Sunday Mass and suddenly a fireball streaks across the sky. There's going to be more than a few people that are like, oh, boy.
They might just turn around and go right back in.
They're going to think this is it. I mean, there's a group of people that will think this is it.
Oh, yeah.
So, just as a warning to all of our listeners, if you see a big fireball across the sky as you get out of Mass on Sunday, it's not the second coming. It's not the rapture. Yeah. It's just a Chinese space station reentering the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And if it lands somewhat in Arlington Heights, you get free tacos.
Look
so I will have to get a taco truck out here. Now, Roger, I understand you're thinking people are going to fake it or probably that people are just going to show up who don't even listen to the show.
Right.
We will quiz them. And also I'm feeling pretty good about, you know, if we had Rose slot, a little more nerve-wracking that everybody's just going to tell everybody.
Huge crowd. Sure.
2 a.m., if you want to make the effort, I think I'm giving you a free taco. I'm just saying, you know what? Welcome aboard. Maybe you'll listen from now on.
You should bring in a scientist, someone who is familiar with, not a taco scientist, someone who's familiar with objects from space who can at least give some kind of verification that the painted styrofoam ball that someone shows up with is or is not an authentic article.
Styrofoam, I don't believe, is going to survive reentry. So I think we can check that right away.
Well, if it's painted with lead paint, I think it...
Well, who's getting lead paint?
I don't know. Somebody's got a supply from 1960.
Okay.
Who
knows? That's a possibility. It will have to be confirmed.
All right.
A piece of space station. The guy told us, and if you're not up at 4 a.m. listening, the guy told us if you do get a chunk of space station in your yard, don't touch it because it could have very bad chemicals on it, et cetera, et cetera. Could be hazardous material. Don't touch it. Also said, due to international law, you don't get to keep your piece of space station.
Right.
However, and I will take this to the bank, I don't believe President Trump will make you give that space station back to China. I think you appeal straight to the president and say, Mr. President, a piece of space station landed in my yard. Don't we go a little bit by finders keepers these days, especially when it comes to China? Well, I think he would say, if a piece of space station hits Trump Tower, you think he's just giving it back and saying no harm, no foul?
No,
Hell no, he's not. They pay for everything, every piece of damage, and there's probably a little bit of an upcharge I'd even
have.
So I'll need some new sod before
no
I do
ups,
that.
No extras.
Exactly. At 2:30, after the 2:30 news, so speaking of space this year, Scott Kelly went up for a year to the space station, remember? Scott Kelly, who is now, I always forget, is he the one that's married to Gabby Giffords, or is that his brother Mark?
Well, that's the brother. The astronaut's brother is married to Gabby Giffords.
Right. Okay. So, well, they're both astronauts, aren't they?
He was the Gabby Giffords' husband was in the program, but his brother is the one who
spent a whole year in the space station and came back down. And they just were talking about how his genes seem to have been disrupted somewhat.
Yeah.
And there was a big thing about 10% of his genes are different. And then there were people like, if 10% of his genes were different, he'd look like an orangutan or something. It wouldn't, you know, that's impossible.
It's a huge amount.
So we'll get some clarification on what exactly is going on.
Okay.
She's the author we're going to have on, Nancy Siegel, has written a couple of books about twins and genetics and DNA and all that good stuff. Nice. So we'll find out somewhat about that.
I love your show. It's so scientific.
Thank you.
I love it.
At 3 a.m., we're going to have on somebody who's going to explain what the hell cryptocurrency is. Because you hear about this Bitcoin crap all the time and all these other things. And if you're like me, you're like, I don't know what the hell this is. I'm not touching it. Do we need to know about it? Is it a fad that will go away? Or what's the story? We've got an author of Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency. Sean Worthington will jump on the phone with us. So we stay very busy. And, of course, your calls at 591-7200. Glenn, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing awesome.
I think you're wrong on offering tacos.
Okay. Why is that?
Seeing that it's Chinese, I think it probably should be egg rolls.
I understand that. I understand that. See, we went with tacos because previously it was Taco Bell who had done the re-entry, everybody gets a free taco. Now, because it's Chinese, egg rolls does make sense. I understand that. However, here's my thing. 2:20 in the morning, if I give you one egg roll, you're going to go, that's not enough. I need more egg rolls. And you're going to stand there until I give you about 100 egg rolls. A taco is a little more filling, a little more whatever, right?
Well, true. And I thought that, too, seeing as Chinese, you know, if it lands once, won't it land again in another hour?
Well, you'll want another one to land in another hour. You know,
space, what they say about Chinese food.
Yeah, piece of space station hits your yard. An hour later, you're wishing there was more, definitely.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm picking Dubuque, Iowa.
You're picking Dubuque, Iowa. Okay.
Why,
interesting.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, it's just the name just came to my head. Yeah, why not Dubuque?
Why not Dubuque? Good old Loras College.
What's in Dubuque anyways?
Well, you've got Loras College there. You've got the Dubuque Fighting Saints. I think USHL hockey team might still be there. There's some good things in Dubuque. Plus, it's right next to Galena, which is just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, Galena's nice.
All right, Glenn, stay safe. Stay out of trouble. Call me. If it hits Dubuque, I'll buy you extra tacos, okay?
I'll keep that promise.
All right, sounds good. Have a great weekend, buddy. Thank you very much. Oh, we could do that. Roger, do you want to make your... So I have Arlington Heights in the pool.
Okay.
Glenn has Dubuque, Iowa.
Oh. Well, I've got to pick a spot, then.
I mean, and it doesn't have to be...
I got nothing to throw a dart at. I'd break the screen.
It doesn't have to be right here, because the latest report you said, or your ABC guy...
Anywhere between California and New York. Well, let me pull up a map of the country, and then...
Maybe it lands right in Omaha.
Who knows? Let me hold on a second.
I will say this, and I know that it's unlikely that anything lands, although I think that something's going to survive this, because those engines are usually made of heavy metals and stuff like that. I bet something does survive and hits the ground. I pray that nobody gets hurt by it. But I will say this. All I really want out of this is a fireball across the sky that we get to see.
Yeah.
And if it's Easter morning, our guy Chris was saying last week, it's going to have to really be, you see it at the right time to see it. In the middle of the night, it'd be a little easier, to pick out.
Sure.
But during the day, a lot tougher.
Okay. All right. So I've got a map of the U.S. here. Yeah, on my computer. I don't know if this is going to work. You need a specific city? Because if I zoom in wherever my finger lands...
Well, you don't get to say it's going to land in Montana. That's too wide.
Okay, well then, but then I'll zoom... Wherever my finger lands, I will zoom in on the map, and whatever city ends up underneath my finger... How about that?
I like that.
Okay, all right, here we go.
While you're doing that, I'm going to read a text. 630
all right, go ahead.
Says, it's not just folks listening at 2 a.m. who know about Arlington Heights Space Station Tacos. You have podcast listeners, too. I listened to last week's podcast today at a convenient 5 p.m. Okay, well, good. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And that means you still got to come at 2 a.m. for the tacos, though. Unlike the podcast, which is conveniently able to be listened to at any time, tacos will only be available from 2 to 5 a.m. Or actually, let me clarify that. We need to set some rules. Tacos will be available from the moment they start serving them until they run out. I'm not paying for 3 full hours worth of tacos.
Yeah.
It might only be a couple hundred. So get here early.
I am in... My finger has landed in Texas. And it is in an open area, as a lot of Texas is open.
Yes.
It is south of Snipes Ranch, which is just east of the... And I'm trying to see the name here. Salt Fork Brazos River. So this is where...
So there's no town?
There's no town. It's an open area. It is between the river, Brazos River, and it looks like Route 1646 just south of a place called Snipes Ranch, which is on County Route 328.
Okay. Well,
wow.
Okay, there you go. I think, you know, my guess is from our latest information, it's not going to hit in Texas because they were going like California up to New York.
Well, so they're taking the northern route.
Yeah, it would have to take a southern trajectory there for you to come through.
What town is near there? Swenson, Texas is south of that.
224 says, hey, boobs, just remember not to have the giveaway on Monday because Little Caesars is giving us a free lunch because of the craziness that happened in the March Madness tournament.
Well, it's not going to happen until you're here again, which would be next Friday night, Saturday morning.
That's if there are free tacos, it will not be until our next show, 2 a.m. Saturday morning.
Yeah. It's we're good.
Not going to be a weekday, not going to be the middle of the afternoon.
Nope.
It's going to have to be middle of the night. And you have to come down here.
Yeah. We're not going to mail them to you.
Yeah.
Like we can afford the tacos, let alone the mailing.
815, and I don't know this. This is amazing if true. 815 says, it really is amazing how many astronauts are twins. Most of the Columbia mission astronauts were twins.
What?
Is there evidence of them having genetic mutations? Well, those people did not stay. The Scott Kelly won the billion because he stayed for a whole year in space. Yeah. But we'll find out about that. I didn't know that a lot of astronauts.
Well, but then you could also look at there have been other American astronauts who have stayed on.
Nobody stayed that long, though. That's the longest,
right. But they've stayed a long period of, like, longer than an astronaut that has been orbiting the Earth or made the trip to the moon and back.
Right. I think they have had astronauts stay up to 6 months up there, right?
Something like that. It's a long period of time.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a lot to do. Stay with us, 312-981-7200. If you want to call or comment on anything, as well as if you want to give us a prediction, if you've got a city where you think space station is going to hit, I'll write it down and we'll remember it. Extra tacos for you if you're correct. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Roger. 45 mile an hour wind gusts today. Well, that ought to be interesting for everybody.
Yeah, hey, it's not bad if you want to go golfing. That ball will really carry.
Or it will carry the wrong way.
Yeah, that's true.
Depends on which way that that hole is facing.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk more about the weather and other things later in the show. Right now, I want to chat about, you all heard the story a couple of years ago, astronaut Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly remained on Earth. His brother Scott Kelly, they're identical twins, went up into space for a whole year, went to the space station for an entire year for kind of a landmark study on how space affects us. We all know that there have been some issues with people who spend too much time in space because of gravity and oxygen, all sorts of things like that. So they decided, well, we've got these two identical sets of genes. Let's put one up in space and keep the other one down and see what happens. And the stories that came out recently were that his genes were affected and didn't all go back to normal. So we wanted to find out a little bit more about that. And so just found an amazing researcher. Her name is Nancy Siegel. She's the author of Twin Myth Conceptions, False Beliefs, Fables, and Facts About Twins and Accidental Brothers, the story of twins exchanged at birth and the power of nature and nurture. Nancy is she is a professor of psychology at California State University Fullerton and director of the Twin Study Center, which she founded back in 1991. Good morning, Nancy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it. When NASA announced that they were going to send a twin up in space for a whole year and then study what happens, you had to be pretty geeked out about that and excited, weren't you?
I was so excited because it's a very simple and very elegant experiment. As you said in the introduction, you've got identical twins with the same genes. You keep one on Earth, you send one up in space, and then you can see the effects because you've got this perfect control down here on Earth.
Yeah.
It'll tell us so much about the effects of space travel on psychological traits, behavioral traits, and on physical traits.
Well, the headlines that first came out when he came back or recently were that his genes were altered and have not gone back to normal. And people started being like, wait a minute, if his genes changed, he wouldn't look the same. It wouldn't just be that. So explain to me what exactly we're saying when his genes are not acting in the same way.
Well, it wasn't the genes themselves that changed, rather the way they get expressed had changed. It looked like there'd been some premature aging based on the change of certain structures. But my understanding is that some of it has gone back. Now, some other things that changed, some of his visual abilities, as well as bone density. Bone density is a very, very sensitive type of trait in space travel.
Bone density, and why is that? Is it so much of this due to the lack of gravity, or what are the factors that are harming people when they spend so much time in space?
It's probably a multiplicity of factors. It's probably the gravity issues. It's probably just a totally different lifestyle environment, probably many, many things. And probably there are some people who are more sensitive to it than others. But the basic point is that you've got this wonderful control down here on Earth for the purposes of comparison.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's interesting to me is when they talk about issues with gravity, and you think about, okay, what would they do about that? Because if they just, you know, did weighted boots or whatever within this so that somebody stood or didn't float the whole time, the organs in their body would still be floating even if they were attached to something. So that wouldn't really answer the problems, would it?
No, it probably wouldn't. And they're just going to have to be more creative in terms of finding ways to protect individuals who do go to space. But I should point out to you that it wasn't really NASA who decided to do this, although they certainly agreed to it. It was the twins themselves who came up with the idea.
Was it really? They said, hey,
yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Huh. Well, twins are amazingly bright when it comes to scientific research. I just love working with twins because they're very interested in themselves as scientific participants, just as unusual people. And so they're willing to take part in research, and they think creatively about who they are and how they got that way.
Nancy, I'm looking at your biography, and you've done a ton of work on twins. What got you so interested in studying twins?
Well, actually, it's because I'm a twin myself.
Okay.
I'm a fraternal twin, and I have a sister who really looks and behaves nothing like me. And so as a small child, I was so fascinated by this because we grew up with the same parents in the same home, went to the same school and summer camps, had many friends in common, and we still turned out to be so different. And I would see these twins in school who were exactly the same in their appearance, and they seemed to get along so well and do the same thing. So it really drove my curiosity. So then when I got to college, and I was always interested in people, psychology was a natural field for me to enter. And we hit the nature-nurture questions. In particular, I was asked to write a paper about personal adjustment. So I decided to pick a topic that I know is of great interest to twins and to their parents. And that's the question of whether or not you separate twins upon school entry. Do you put them into separate classes? And that was an issue my parents struggled with as well. Mm. And I found that I enjoyed reading this literature so much in a way that I hadn't enjoyed anything. And so I just knew right then and there that this was going to be my calling. And I have to tell you that it's been more exciting and more interesting and more informative as I go through it. I find new topics to study, wonderful people to work with. It's just been a complete joy.
Oh, interesting. And now when we hear about twins and, like, you know, they feel pain when another one feels pain, or you'll hear these amazing stories about this connection between twins, is a lot of that, do you find that to really be true? And you mentioned that you're a fraternal twin. Is there a huge difference between fraternal twins and identical twins and their relationships?
You've posed a lot of questions here, so I'll start with the second one. There is a huge difference between identical and fraternal twins. Identical twins share all their genes in common, having split from a single fertilized egg within the first 2 weeks after conception. And fraternal twins result when a woman releases two eggs at the same time, and they're separately fertilized by two separate sperm. So these twins share half their genes on average, which is exactly the same as ordinary siblings. Now, your question about ESP or telepathic communication, there is really no evidence for this whatsoever. In fact, in my book, Twin Mythconceptions, this is one of the mythconceptions I address. And we do see a kind of interesting phenomenon within identical twins, more than fraternals. I think it's because they're socially closer to one another. But that makes sense because they share so many characteristics in common, which do have a partial genetic basis. The way they interpret the world, their information processing strategies, their personalities, things of that sort. So they tend to be closer on average than fraternal twins. Now, in my other book that's coming out in 2 weeks, Accidental Brothers, this tells the extraordinary story of two sets of twins from Colombia, South America, who were accidentally switched at birth. So you had two sets of unrelated brothers growing up 150 miles apart. thinking they were fraternal twins. And none of those pairs ever had an inkling that there was an identical twin out there. And if there was such a thing as telepathic communication, then that should have been the case. I worked for many years on the Minnesota study of twins raised apart at the University of Minnesota. I must have studied close to 100 of these amazing sets. And I don't think I can even name one pair that experienced that kind of connection.
Mm, fascinating. So that's interesting because there's really two different ways then to sort of study twins, I guess. The identical twins who spend every moment together versus the fraternal twins who spend every moment together. The fraternal twins that grow up together and experience all the same things and you see the differences. They're just like a pair of they're just like a pair of brothers who could have been born years apart, but they actually happen to be born the same time. So they go through all these things together versus the identical who not only go through everything together in that same way, but also share some genes. So you would think would react and do certain things in certain ways. What tell me a little bit more about the genes and how that affects an identical twin. Like what type of things would twins be more likely to experience in the same way or express in the same way because of their identicality of their genes?
Okay. Well, I must tell you that at this point, there are just reams and reams of studies showing that virtually every human trait has a genetic component at some level. This is not saying that everything is completely genetically influenced, but rather that the various behaviors and physical traits that we have are influenced to some degree by genetic effects. And this varies, you know, somewhat from trait to trait. But we do find a genetic influence on general intelligence, on special abilities like verbal processing, perceptual speed, spatial orientation. We find genetic influences on personality, on how aggressive you might be, on how sociable you might be. We find genetic influences on a host of diseases, from multiple sclerosis to various types of cancers and diabetes. But I must point out that identical twins are not exactly the same in any way, which means the environment is clearly playing a role. In fact, if you take some of the mental disorders like schizophrenia, only about 40% of identical twins who have an affected twin brother or sister do themselves show the condition. So this is, again, interesting. It's kind of like a natural twin control, kind of like the Kelly brothers, although one of them was purposely sent into space. But if you have identical twins where one has a disease and one doesn't, this is a way of looking to see what activates the genetic predisposition in one but keeps it silent in the other. So twins themselves are just walking natural experiments. They really, really are. But I also want to point out that there is overlap among the identicals and fraternals. Some identicals are more alike than others. Some fraternal twins are more alike than others, just like ordinary siblings can be. And some fraternal twins are as socially close as identicals, and some identical twins aren't that close at all. But what's interesting and important is the general trend. And with the general trend, it's that identicals are very similar in most ways and very close, fraternal twins less so.
That's interesting because the very close, I would imagine that really just depends on how they grew up and who they became more than their genetic makeup, I would think, right?
Well, it's multiple causation. You know, part of it depends on their personality. If you're born very aggressive or very distant or very hostile, you know, you're probably not going to develop a really close relationship with your twin.
Can you be born very distant, aggressive, or hostile?
Well. What I mean is that the predisposition to develop these kinds of traits, you know, obviously whoever we become is a combination of our genes being expressed in an environment. And so maybe you have the predisposition to be a certain way, but something about the environment will mitigate it. You see what I'm saying?
So we do have, I don't know that. We do have predispositions that we're born with to maybe be more aggressive, be more athletic, be more, I imagine athletic because that's genetic makeup and stuff, but be angrier or things like that. There is a predisposition that could be activated for that?
Yeah, there are predispositions that may or may not be expressed depending upon the environment. And, you know, parents right away who have fraternal twins see differences between their children. There might be a more active twin. There might be a more alert twin. I really believe that parents of fraternal twins are probably the sharpest observers of behavior that we have. We all have predispositions. Individual differences are all around us. Nobody is exactly the same. Even identical twins are not exactly the same. despite their similar genes. And why? Because of a lot of prenatal and postnatal factors that may activate certain genes. I mean, think about this. We know that an allergy to penicillin is genetically influenced. And if you're somebody who has this predisposition, but you never get a penicillin shot, you're never going to show the reaction. But if you do get that shot, then you will show it. So that's, I think, a good way of thinking about certain types of behaviors.
Well, and I wonder if, like you mentioned, that parents seem to know right away their kids are certain ways. And I wonder how much of what we think they are, they become, because that's how we treat them. So, for example, Nancy, we actually have fraternal triplets in our house that are 12 years old. Yes, two boys and a girl. And they all have their very distinct personalities. But I wonder how much we reinforce those personalities by telling them all the time or reacting to them because of how we feel they are.
Well, you see, you've hit the nail on the head. Because parents do react to children based on their children's behaviors. But the important point is that parents don't create these. Now, if you wanted to create your children a certain way, they should all be the same. But you've just told me that your 12-year-old kids, same age, growing up in the same home with the same parents, and they probably had a lot of similar experiences, are quite different. And it's because each of those children came into the world with a different set of predispositions. You know, we tend to think of the home environment as being the same for all children, but it really isn't. There could be one child who really loves the sports equipment that's available, or another child that shuns the sports equipment but goes for the computers. So children will gravitate towards certain types of elements in their home based upon who they are. Parents can reinforce, of course. Parents can downplay certain things. Parents have important roles in finding out what children are good at, what children like to do, and nurturing these opportunities as much as possible. But parents do not create them. Parents react to children. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, parents treat their kids differently. Well, of course they do. And in my mind, that's their treatment. If you try to treat your children exactly the same, that would probably shortchange one or two of them.
I have to ask you a question now because I've just started watching at home this show called Mindhunter. Have you heard of this on Netflix?
I haven't.
Okay, so it's on Netflix, and I don't know how much it's based in fact. I think it's supposed to be, but it's about the FBI in like the 70s and starting to look at the psychology of why crimes are committed certain ways. They started having more thrill killings, Son of Sam, Manson stuff, and these two guys within the FBI wanted to start looking at, you know, the FBI had just been figure out who did it, why, you know, figure out who did it, catch them, put them in jail. And they were trying to come up with, well, if they commit a crime in a certain way, what were they thinking? Why were they thinking? And if we could start figuring that out, maybe we can prevent some of these or catch them quicker, things like that. And so they were talking about how the thinking back at the time was sometimes just there's bad people in the world. They were born that way. Is there, when we talk about predispositions, are kids, some kids predisposed to have a higher likelihood of becoming criminals?
Predispositions are not absolutes. Genes work in probabilistic ways, not in deterministic ways. There may be some children who are at higher risk for certain types of behaviors, which can sometimes be overridden by certain types of very sensitive parenting, certain types of environmental exposures. But we do have different predispositions that we come into the world with, and in conjunction with our environment, they may or may not be expressed. They may or may not be expressed to the same degree. A lot of it just depends. But children do come into the world with certain predispositions. And as I said, you're in a unique position to see this, being the father of fraternal triplets, as are other parents who have fraternal twins or children very near in age. You know, I often say that parents of one child are environmentalists because they do certain things and maybe they see what they think is a certain response. But parents of more than one child tend to be the quote-unquote geneticists because they can see that what they do for one child may not work with the other. One of the best examples I can give you on this point is a family I studied in one of my books called Indivisible by Two, where the mom naturally conceived quadruplets, but they were born as two sets of identical twins because she obviously conceived fraternals and each one of those fertilized eggs divided. And she said that there were just enormous differences between the two identical pairs. I'm sorry, yeah, between the two identical pairs, but within the identical pairs, there were a lot of similarities. So again, you know, you can see that right from birth, children do have different sorts of behaviors.
I'm sorry I'm getting so hung up on the predispositions, but it's fascinating to me. And when we talk about that in genetic terms, are those being identified, those predispositions? I mean, 20 years from now, will my kids be having kids and a geneticist tell them, well, here's the genes that are likely, that the predispositions are likely to have? Like, are we eventually going to say, oh, these couples shouldn't have kids together because the predispositions of these things might be dangerous?
First of all, when you talk about predispositions for complex behaviors, like criminality, aggression, things of that, those are the kinds of behaviors that are influenced by many, many genes.
Sure.
And even though researchers now are finding certain genes linked to certain complex behaviors, I mean, even height and weight, very complex behaviors, these genes, each individual gene that might be linked to these behaviors, accounts for a very, very tiny portion of the influence. So I think that we are a very, very, very far distance from actually specifying should person A marry couple B or marry person B, etc. I think that we're a very far distance from that. And you know, I think that most couples are going to want to have children the old-fashioned way. The element of surprise about what you get, I think, you know, really makes parenting an exciting proposition. And I think that, you know, when you start to tinker with genes, I mean, you don't know exactly what, you know, is going to come out. Now, when we think about single gene traits, such as diseases, Tay-Sachs disease, that is due to having two recessive genes. And so if you've got a parent that carries one and a parent that carries the other, the chance that the child will be affected is 25%. So couples like that are often advised to undergo some kind of genetic counseling, maybe prenatal diagnosis, to see if, in fact, the child is affected. Because Tay-Sachs is a heartbreaking disease. The child is born normally and remains that way for a number of months until it just degenerates and will die by age 3. It's a very heartbreaking condition. But with genetic counseling, you know, we can oversee that kind of thing and prevent it. But that's a far cry from talking about a complex behavior, as I said, such as criminality or sure. personality or certain sorts of mental abilities.
It is. I just worry, you know, the way our world is headed with technology and everything else, that people would start. What was the, there was a Tom Cruise movie, right? A Minority Report, where they were, wasn't that where they were predicting, you know, arresting criminals before they committed crimes and things like that? And I know.
Yeah, well, I didn't see the movie. And I think that when some of the scientific evidence gets out, I think that there is a lot of room for misinterpretation, misapplication.
Sure.
But that's not a reason not to do it. I think that what's important is for scientists to very clearly explain what these things can do, what they can't do. That's what's important, scientific understanding. There are a lot of benefits to things. Look, when in vitro fertilization was introduced in England in 1978 and in this country in 1981, people threw their hands up and said that's the end of family life as we know it. But you know what? It's not. And what it's done instead is it has brought a lot of joy and a lot of pleasure to so many countless couples who would otherwise have been infertile.
Yeah.
So now there's also, you know, there's room for, you know, distortion of these things. But as long as you are aware of things and information is out there, that's the most important thing. Public understanding.
Nancy Siegel is the author of the book that's about to come out, Accidental Brothers, the Story of Twins Exchanged at Birth and the Power of Nature and Nurture. We're out of time tonight, but I'd love to have you back down the road to talk about that in depth a little more, because I'm sure that's just a fascinating story.
It is, and I'd love to come back. You just send me an invitation.
That sounds good. Nancy, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Not a problem. My pleasure.
All right. Have a great morning. Again, Accidental Brothers, the Story of Twins Exchanged at Birth and the Power of Nature and Nurture. One of the older books from last year, Twin Myth Conceptions, False Beliefs, Fables, and Facts About Twins. News is next on 720 WGN. Before we get out of here at 5 a.m., I still want to talk about Roseanne. I want to talk about extra innings baseball games. I want to talk about that TV show I just mentioned, Mindhunter. And what did the Pope say about heaven and hell? We will get to all of that at some point, some way, somehow, before 5 a.m. But after the news, we're going to talk about cryptocurrency. Sean Worthington has a book out called Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency. He says that he has invented a digital currency. There's more and more. Bitcoin isn't the only one. There's a bunch of them out there. Roger, do you have any understanding of these cryptocurrencies?
I have a scintilla amount of knowledge about this. I think the only knowledge I had was that there was more than one.
Yeah. I don't know if I carry as much as you even. So we're going to try to figure out what in the world this is. Should we be learning more about it? Is it just a fad that will go away? There's places that accept cryptocurrency as payment now. Bitcoin went, like, blew up this year. And mm-hmm. if you had Bitcoin, you suddenly became rich. And then suddenly you lost a lot of value as well. Right.
But now so it's starting to come back.
Why does it go up and down so much? Yeah. And how does it all work? We'll figure out whatever we can after we check the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. News now upstairs. Stairs with Roger Badish. It's the Matt Bubala Show, everybody. 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up even later with us. It's 3:07 in the morning here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the Tribune Tower. Sean Worthington's about to jump on the phone with us. In his book, Beyond Bitcoin, he writes, in the future, there will be no banks except the banks on your cell phones and computers. There will be no tellers, vaults, loan officers, or buildings to house them, nor will there be any accountants. Software will take care of all the accounting and banking for you. Tax systems will all but disappear. No one will pay taxes. Only taxes on land and homes will be possible. People will be able to trade by whisper and store their money in their minds where it cannot be seized or detected. Governments will decline. Governments will have to limit their income to fees, bonds, and donations. Politicians who once got elected by delivering largesse to the public will be out of business. You will receive your income by email, text message, and website download. It will go directly into the bank on your desktop. This bank will pay your bills automatically on the dates you specify by sending emails to those you wish to pay. Okay, well, that sounds like a frightening future. Sean Worthington is on the phone with us. Sean, before we get into all of that, because now I'm like, oh, my God, it's like the Hunger Games out here all of a sudden. First, you got to explain to me how we're getting there in the first place. And I'm sorry that we are completely unknowledgeable here. We just want to ask first, what the hell is Bitcoin and what is cryptocurrency? Can you explain it to those of us who are just looking at this like our parents did VCRs 20 years ago?
Absolutely. You know, Bitcoin is the first digital currency to solve what's called the physical integrity problem of digital money. And the problem is how can you ever have a digital money if you can just copy and paste it a million times and counterfeit it, or somebody can come in and shut off the server and just shut it all down or hack it or something. And Bitcoin was able to do that by creating a new data structure called the blockchain. The blockchain is a database. It's a database that you can write transactions to. You can read transactions from it, but you cannot delete transactions or update or change the transactions that have happened in the past. And so this gives us a way to track money as it goes from person to person, and we can stop counterfeits and figure out who owns the money. And, you know, the purpose of money is to basically track how much value we add to the economy so that we can get some of that same value out. And Bitcoin was really the first one to do that.
Now, when Bitcoin was first starting to gain some popularity in the popular press, I guess, we would read about how it's it can't be faked, it can't be counterfeited, you can track everything, and so you wouldn't lose your money, it's always going to be there, you're going to be able to find it. But I want to say in the last year, there have been a couple stories about people who had accounts, then that everything was wiped out. How is this not very, very susceptible to hacking?
Well, as a matter of fact, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are susceptible because they've got this one private key. And if somebody can get that private key, then they have access to all your money. And so it's not like regular money where you can put some in one bank and one under your pillow and some of it, you know, buried underground. It's all in this one account. And you've got to guard that private key. And if somebody can get it, they just have everything. So you're right, it is a big problem with the cryptocurrencies.
So, well, that wasn't very reassuring then, because I know, I understand you have this key, but to get to your Bitcoin, you're going to have to access it through your phone or your laptop or something. So you're going to be using that key. And if you get hacked, somebody can get that. Should we be nervous about the idea of cryptocurrency getting hacked?
Well, yes, you should. But in the future, we've got this thing called Cloudcoin, my invention. And instead of having it so that every person has accounts and they all have to log in and use user private keys, what we have is we have it so that all of the money itself has its own accounts. And so all you have to do is give the money from one person to another person, and then you check to see if the money is authentic or not. And so it's a completely different game changer, and it is possible to separate the money into different places and to stop that systematic risk that we have with cryptocurrencies. So I think that, and we can also embed PIN numbers and other biometric information. So it's possible that within the next year or two, we could have a crypto, I should say a digital currency that is unstealable.
Well, and that seems like the natural place for that to go, right? For whether it's retinal scans or fingerprints or things like that. So there has to be something that can't be accessed remotely. But I imagine even then, there are people are going to find ways to hack into these things. Explain to me mining Bitcoin and mining cryptocurrency. How do people earn cryptocurrency at first? I mean, I know right now I could sell something on eBay and on PayPal or whatever. I could be paid in cryptocurrency. But when they say mining Bitcoin and things like that, what does that mean?
Well, when they created cryptocurrencies, they figured that money should be like gold and that it should be mined out of the ground. And so they wanted to create an artificial gold mine in which you had to dig around to find that. And so this allowed people to create servers, and these servers would handle the transactions, add to the blockchain. But then after they were done with that, they would be able to guess numbers, which is kind of like searching around. And as they guessed numbers, it would become harder and harder because these numbers would be bigger and bigger. So they started with small numbers, now they're up to the trillions, and it requires lots of guessing. And so if you're able to handle, if you're one of these system administrators who runs the blockchain and you handle all of these transactions, you get to guess, and there's a chance you'll win, and then you'll get some Bitcoins and you'll actually be paid for what you're doing, and it'll be worth your while.
But who is creating that value? I mean, who are those Bitcoins just added that, you know, out of thin air? Who owned those Bitcoins that are now valuable that you could find if you do this work?
So the idea is that they've got this Bitcoin network, and there's thousands of servers, and they all need to encrypt and decrypt, and the encryption requires a lot of electricity, requires a lot of hardware, then it gets hot, and you have to cool it down, so that's more electricity. And so in order to pay for that, they're going to reward the system administrators, which they call miners, for doing that by giving them Bitcoins. So really, it's a tool to pay for the infrastructure and create new money and reward those people that are running the servers that do the transactions.
Okay, so that makes sense. So they're doing some work for the Bitcoin. Why did Bitcoin become so insanely valuable this year and then go back down? Is that the type of thing that's going to happen with digital currencies or cryptocurrencies, is that they're going to have very high highs and low lows? Are they going to be roller coaster-like?
So this was caused by the Federal Reserve, not actually Bitcoin. So what happens is that the Federal Reserve is able to produce money anytime that somebody wants to borrow it. And so back in 2008 or 2006, I should say, we had the big housing bust, and it was a similar situation. The banks want to loan to people who they think is a safe investment, so they loan to the homeowners, and that causes the price to go up. But here recently, people started realizing, hey, there's a lot of money to be made in Bitcoin, and they started borrowing on their credit cards, and they started mortgaging their houses, putting second mortgages on it, and taking all the family savings and putting it into Bitcoin. And that's caused there to be a big, giant spike. And, of course, it was a bubble, and it popped, and it's still popping.
But it's also coming back a little bit right now, right? I mean, do you think that Bitcoin was a bubble? And because I know that you've invented a cryptocurrency as well, there are several of them out there that we've started hearing about. Bitcoin still has the Google-ness of being the most well-known, I guess, but I know there's several out there. Is it a cryptocurrency bubble, or is it just a Bitcoin bubble?
So it is a cryptocurrency bubble in general, but some of the currencies are hit more than others. Bitcoin is the one that had the most amount of hype, and so it did decline the most. And it is a real bubble, and it's following this classical bubble trajectory. And it is going down, and I think that it's going to keep going down, and we'll see it actually go below what it's actually worth. And that's going to have some big consequences. But there's about 1,500 other digital currencies that are called altcoins, or they're cryptocurrencies. And they just take the same Bitcoin code, because it's open source, you just copy and paste it, rename it, market it, and now you've got another currency, and they sell them. But we're seeing all of them being affected and all of them going down in value.
My newsman, Roger Badish, has a question for you, Sean.
Sure.
Now, we've been watching the value of these go up and then down and up and down, and we haven't seen any like disastrous reports in the news about people have lost their entire life savings, their homes, everything like that. But my question is, with all of these over 1,000 different kinds of cryptocurrencies, what are the regulations? We have the banking laws in place, even though they're starting to get rid of some of them. We have lending laws in place. Who's going to regulate this? Is it the federal government? Is it the cryptocurrency agencies, the cryptocurrency banks?
Or the International Monetary Fund, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Who's got the control over all this stuff?
Yes. Well, first of all, you have to assume that somebody can control it. And we see that a lot of agencies in California, I mean, we had something called eGold here about 20 years ago, and all these people took their gold and they put it in a vault, and they issued digital certificates against it, and they traded billions of dollars worth. And then one day the state of California just kicked in the door and took all the gold and said they were doing something illegal. But now the state of California has made it legal to create currencies like I've done. We see that money is essential, a part of, you know, human civilization. Without money, our civilization just collapses. So money is very important. And the federal government doesn't have anything in the Constitution that specifies anything about the banks. And in fact, a lot of Americans feel that the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government have teamed up. They've created a monopolistic situation in which it's kind of like the church and state back in the old days, only it's the government and the banks. And they allow the banks to basically create money, and it allows the government to borrow as much money as they want. And that's kind of like a hack, because monetary systems are, in fact, information systems. Money is data. And if you can get some of that money, it's kind of like you're hacking. And there really is no laws that I can see that specify what the federal government can do about that.
You talk about, you mentioned in the book early on that taxes, everything is going to change once cryptocurrency really becomes what's being used all the time. Why would the government not be able to, especially since all this is traceable and trackable, why wouldn't governments be able to charge us per transaction or, you know, institute some sort of tax on that?
And so that's exactly what we're seeing in China and in Venezuela, which are terrible countries. Venezuela has just created this petro currency, and they give out accounts on this thing just like you get a social security number, and they can track everything that you buy and everything that you sell. They know how much money you have. They can redistribute wealth. They can basically control you like a farm animal. And in China, it's even worse. It is just, you know, it's terrible. And that's, you know, what the blockchain does. That's the blockchain tracks all transactions, and it's all public. It's a public ledger. So that is what I call blockchain socialism. This is not the future that you want. But something like Cloudcoin, which you don't have to have an account, and you can store it in your mind and share it by whispering, that is just the exact opposite. And then we see that the government has an inability to even know that you have the money.
But the government's not going to allow that, are they, Sean? I mean, if the system for taxing, transactions or purchases or things like that went away, the government would collapse, especially when we're, borrowing $84 trillion as it is this year, right? So you got to imagine they're going to step ahead of that and make sure that however this stuff gets traded, there's going to be a way for taxation, aren't they?
Well, in theory, they work for us. And in South Korea, we just saw, some of this dynamic happen where the South Korean government announced that they were going to get rid of cryptocurrency. They were going to make it illegal. They were going to tax the hell out of everything. And then the people got angry at them, and they may change their mind really quick. And so nobody wants to see the banks have a monopoly over the power like they do now. And I don't think anybody wants to see the government have that kind of ability either.
Well, Sean, I'm going to correct you on one thing. You said nobody wants to see the banks have that kind of power, and that's not true.
The banks do.
The banks want to see the banks have that kind of power, and the banks are going to buy that power by donating as much money as they need to our elected officials. I mean, Sean, people are getting killed by AR-15s. There's this whole uprising for it. 435 people ain't changing the laws. There's a reason for that, because money talks, and the banks have more money than anybody. So I can't imagine the banks are going to let themselves get sidelined before this is over. I mean, do you really see that happening?
Well, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a fight. There's definitely going to be a fight, and we'll see what kind of weapons come out, and whether they're real weapons or if they're logical weapons or if they're. But in Western civilization, we got this thing called the argument, and we make arguments, and it's logical, and hopefully logic and reason will win out.
Sean Worthington is the author of Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency. You can find it online right now. It's fascinating. I still don't quite grasp it, Sean, but I'll be interested to see how Cloudcoin takes off and everything you've got going. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great evening. Sean Worthington, again, Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency. 3:23 in the morning on 720 WGN. Thank you, Hootie. Matt Babal here with you on 720 WGN, 3:26 in the morning. Some stragglers still walking down Michigan Avenue. God bless them. God bless youth and indiscretion. All right, I apologize. I'm going to just say that normally I go a little longer on the interviews, but Sean, nice guy and all, but he invented his own cryptocurrency, and he seemed a little more interested in telling me how that's going to solve all these problems versus explaining what the hell the cryptocurrency is, which Roger and I were just talking about during the commercials. We're still not quite there. Just do you or Stefan own any cryptocurrency?
I do not.
Do you know anybody who does?
Stefan has some.
He does have some?
I'm not sure which one it is, though.
Does he understand it, or is he just doing it?
He's only invested like a couple hundred dollars, yeah. So it's not crazy.
Right.
But
yeah, I have a friend who's bought a Bitcoin and one other coin. I don't know which, just because she wanted to force herself to learn a little more. I still don't quite understand it. Roger and I are still talking about it's going to be tracked or it's going to get hacked. How is this so much different than everything else? And I absolutely stand by what I said. The government will never allow it to become something that doesn't allow taxation or truly allows private, transactions. I mean, that's just not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
Nope.
All right. Let's talk about this real quick.
Ooh.
630 text. Hi, Matt. This is Steve from Streamwood. What do you think about the legal increase of speed limits on the Jane Addams? Strange as the highway death rates have been going up. Have a happy Easter. Happy Easter to you, Steve. Did you see, Roger, that they went up to 70 miles an hour on the Jane Addams?
Back up to 70?
I don't know if it's back up to 70. Well, has it ever been 70?
I remember when
pre-70s?
The highways and the freeways were 75 miles an hour. Back when I was driving to and from SIU.
So that was pre-1970 gas shortage?
Yeah. They did not go. The speed limits didn't get dropped down to 60 miles an hour until, I think, after 75, 70... Eight, something like that.
Well, when I was growing up, 55 was the max just about anywhere.
No, will you get out on the highways?
Yes.
It was 75,
no, it
70,
was
75. Yes, it was.
No, not when,
yes, it was.
Not when I was growing
well,
up.
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay, young whippersnapper.
In the late 70s through the 80s.
Yes.
The max was 55 for a long time, right?
Yeah, they dropped it from 70 or 75, yes.
And now the Jane Addams just this week went up to 70. And I'm going to make a little confession. I did 90 down here the whole
time.
There's no traffic. It's awesome. It's like the Autobahn.
Well, just is there any construction out where you are?
No, not right now.
Okay.
There was a tiny, I don't think there was like anything on the way down tonight.
Good.
You know, Easter weekend and all.
Yeah, but still, that's when you have too many accidents.
Well, I'm just saying they picked up the construction. You know, there's nobody working.
Right. I got you. Yeah.
Is my guess.
Yeah.
But.
There's still some construction out there, at least the barricades and stuff, because they are long-term projects.
Sure.
And it would take too long and cost too much money to take down, and then you still have the part of the road that is all torn up. So
you
have to keep it blocked off.
Right. I'm not saying there was nobody working.
Right.
And there was no real slowdowns on the way. I mean, it was nice. So the 70-mile-an-hour speed limit, I'm okay with, because if it's, quite honestly, when the roads are clear, we're all doing 80 as it is.
Right.
Because half the time you're in 20-mile-an-hour traffic or less.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's open and you go. And I think that as long as people are smart about driving, then I'm okay with it. And I know we don't really trust people and their driving skills, but.
And some people already go 70, even when most everyone is going 30 or 40.
Yeah.
They're zipping in and out of traffic. I had one today on the side streets, heading towards the outer drive to come here. And there was a spot, it's on Ridge, and it turns into Hollywood. I don't know if you're familiar with the far north side.
I'm not.
So it Ridge turns into Hollywood and then Bryn Mawr. Actually, it ends right there. And there's a left turn lane, and then there's a pass-through lane. You go to Bryn Mawr in the right lane, and you make a left turn onto Hollywood off a ridge and the left turn lane. And the lights operate separately. So you could be stopped for the left turn lane, but the right turn, the right-hand lane going straight can continue on. So a driver that was in the left turn lane, about a car, two cars ahead of me, but about three cars behind the first car in the lane, decides to go into the right-hand lane. And I'm thinking, all right, you're in the wrong lane. You're going to go straight through the Bryn Mawr. Nope. Takes the right-hand lane, turns around in front of the other cars, and when the oncoming traffic clears, even though the light hasn't changed, takes off. Takes off right down Hollywood.
Must have been in a rush.
No. I mean, seriously, come on.
I know. Listen, people are not good drivers. I know. I understand. I understand the frustration,
Sorry,
Roger.
Got me.
Okay, here's the deal.
Yes.
It is 3:32.
Yes, sir.
Ready for the news. After that, I do want to talk about what the Pope said about heaven and hell. I think you'll find this fascinating. Allegedly. We've got to read the story. We'll talk about it after we check the headlines upstairs in the newsroom. Here's Roger Bannon. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're with you until 5 a.m. when Orion and Max will have the morning show to get your Saturday off to a good start. Well, I guess your Saturday's off to a good start just because you're hanging out with us.
That's right.
The Loyola Ramblers, Final Four, they play tonight. I want to say 5:09.
Boy, you got it right on the button there.
And my son, Michael, or Tommy, says, what in the world is with the 5:09? Well, how about 5 o'clock? What's with 5:09, Tommy? It's Tommy. He's driven nuts by that.
That's all right. The broadcast starts at 5, tip off at 5:09.
Now, why are they telling us that? Don't they want us to watch the first 9 minutes of the broadcast? I imagine the sponsors would say, hey, how about you just tell them it's at 5? And they wait.
I don't know. I don't schedule
these. Is there some law that you have to give out the exact time that the tip off happens?
I don't know.
All right. Well, me neither. But that's okay.
But in case you're like making something to eat, some treats or something,
you got an extra 8 minutes.
You got, yeah. I mean, honey, is the game on? Yeah, it just started.
It is weird. The Cubs game was starting at 11:40 on Thursday. That was weird. Like, why at 11:40? Because they probably started the broadcast at 11:30, but it's in the paper, I think, 11:40, which was weird.
Well, isn't it opening day?
It was opening day.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so it's they had all the ceremonial stuff ahead of time.
Yeah. And so they're putting in the paper, this is when first pitch is scheduled for?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess
so.
That makes sense.
I think that's what
it does. I guess
it
makes sense.
Yeah.
So I want to get into what the Pope said in a minute, but there's an interesting, fascinating article I just found from Time Magazine on Yahoo, headlined, "The Real Reason Why Mary Magdalene is Such a Controversial Figure." It's fascinating because I grew up, well, Roger, you grew up probably not hearing at all about Mary Magdalene, right? Because you
grew up,
you're
Jewish. Well, we heard about Magdalene, but I mean, it wasn't like a family discussion.
She's not part of the religion at all.
No, not at all.
Well, I always grew up, Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. I mean, that's kind of what I thought we were learning in the Catholic Church. Maybe a prostitute, maybe an unwed woman, something. There was always something sort of scarlet letterish about Mary Magdalene. And there's a movie that already came out in the UK, and I don't know when it's coming out here, but it's starring Rooney Mara as Mary Magdalene and Joaquin Phoenix as Jesus.
Wow.
And it's about Mary Magdalene. And it's fascinating because I have not, you know, there's some controversy, and I've never heard this before, but I don't pay enough attention. The painting, The Last Supper.
Yeah.
It's Da Vinci, right? Didn't Da Vinci do The Last Supper?
Is that right?
I don't know. I don't know who did The Last Supper. But question about whether Mary Magdalene is seated next to Jesus. And I've never looked at the painting that closely, but if you look to our left as we're looking at it, it looks like there is a woman right there. I've never noticed that before or read anything about it.
I'm pulling up the picture here. And in the blue...
With the kind
garment
of
with the brown wrap around it, leaning away from the Jesus figure, is what appears to be a female figure because and there is a second female figure in there.
There is.
To the left of Jesus, our right, there are two men sitting there in beards and long hair, and there appears to be a female figure standing with a, looks like a burgundy type wrap. Leaning forward, and then there are three other men past her. There's only
so now to me that could be that one could be another guy.
No, but
the one on the other
look
side
like it to me.
The one on the other side in the blue, leaning away with the long hair, that really looks feminine. Looks like a female to me.
I think they both look feminine to me.
Well,
to me, and there's only one man in the picture with no beard.
So there's a question over Mary Magdalene, and it just this article talks about why she is such a controversial figure, and how the church in 1969 the Catholic Church admitted that it had mistakenly identified Mary Magdalene as a sex worker. I didn't know that. I didn't know we came around on that. And this film with Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara partially draws from the Gospel of Mary, a, quote, mysterious document discovered in the 19th century. It has no known author, and although it's popularly known as a gospel, it's not technically classed as one, as gospels generally recount the events during Jesus' life rather than beginning after his death. It's thought the text was written sometime in the 2nd century, but some scholars claim it overlaps Jesus' lifetime. So that's pretty fascinating. Pope Francis is in the news because I guess he has a friend. I didn't know this. This is crazy. Let me read you some of the story.
All right.
In another interview with his longtime atheist friend, Eugenio Scalfari, I didn't know Pope Francis had a longtime atheist friend, although it's good that he does. We should all talk to people who have different beliefs than our own.
Agreed.
So I love that the Pope talks to an atheist. Pope Francis claims that hell does not exist and that condemned souls just disappear. This would be a denial of the 2,000-year-old teaching of the Catholic Church about the reality of hell and the eternal existence of the soul. Now, I will say that, Okay, so the interview is headlined, "The Pope, it is an honor to be called revolutionary." Scalfaro says to the Pope, "Your Holiness, in our previous meeting, you told me that our species will disappear in a certain moment and that God, still out of his creative force, will create new species. You have never spoken to me about the souls who died in sin and will go to hell to suffer it for eternity. You have, however, spoken to me of good souls admitted to the contemplation of God. But what about bad souls? Where are they punished?" Pope Francis says, "They are not punished. Those who repent obtain the forgiveness of God and enter the rank of souls who contemplate him. But those who do not repent and cannot therefore be forgiven disappear. There is no hell. There is the disappearance of sinful souls." Well, that's goes against everything that we learned, all learned, all those Sundays in school as a Catholic. And that is just ridiculously fascinating. Now, I will say that the Catholic Church released a statement after this guy's interview gained a lot of attention. The Vatican said, "The Holy Father Francis recently received the founder of the newspaper La Repubblica in a private meeting on the occasion of Easter, without, however, giving him any interviews. What is reported by the author in today's article is the result of his reconstruction, in which the textual words pronounced by the Pope are not quoted. No quotation of the aforementioned article must therefore be considered as a faithful transcription of the words of the Holy Father." Now, the church didn't come out and say, "Hey, the Pope didn't say there's no hell. Relax, everybody." They said, nothing is quoted. That was a conversation. He's recounting what they said. But they didn't deny that he said it. So that's fascinating. Because we kind of grew up with the whole, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
If you're not good, you're going to hell and you suffer for eternity. And if the Pope doesn't believe in hell, that is fascinating.
Well, but doesn't necessarily say that he doesn't.
He doesn't believe. Because, you know, yeah. Your soul disappearing is probably just as bad. Although, maybe not. Because that... Oh, God. This is another one of those things where you just blow your head.
Careful now.
I just... It's, like, so hard to wrap around. I mean, your soul just disappearing is better than your soul suffering for eternity and the damnation and the fires of hell. I mean, we grew up with these...
But now the question is begged, where does it disappear to?
Well, disappear means disappear. It doesn't.
Well, but it disappear means
ceases to exist
here. It then where does it then go to?
It ceases to exist altogether.
Well,
I know. It's just we don't know.
See, instead of saying it disappears, see, to me, disappearing, hey, ooh, where'd you disappear to? So instead of saying that, one who would argue.
How about if he used the term.
Ceases to be.
Evaporate.
No, it ceases to be, period.
Okay, well, that's what he meant by disappear. This is all translation from Italian or Latin or something, I'm sure.
Okay. And again, I'm not saying that it ceases to be.
Well,
we don't know. Making a judgment.
I mean, I'm
anything.
Not going to argue with the Pope, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you would.
No, I wouldn't argue with him. Are you kidding? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir. Yes, sir.
Reminds me of my favorite, or one of my favorite. There's a Seinfeld episode. Did you watch Seinfeld a lot? Or not?
I didn't watch it that much.
Jerry's dentist, Tim Whatley, played in his much younger years by the guy who was in Breaking Bad, whose name I can't remember now, Bryan Cranston.
Oh.
Tim Whatley converts to Judaism.
Okay.
And he's telling all these Jewish jokes. And Jerry's getting very offended by this. He thinks he just converted so he could tell the jokes.
Yeah.
And so Jerry goes to the Catholic Church into a confessional. And... when we go to confession, there's a little kneeler that we kneel down on. And
right.
Jerry's never seen this before, so he sits on the kneeler.
He sits.
He doesn't know what to do with it, so he sits on it. And he says, the priest says, you know, welcome, you know, would you like to confess your sins? And Jerry starts with, well, I'm Jewish. And the priest says, oh, that's not a sin.
Yeah. Yikes.
And then he tells him, you know, Tim Whatley's converted to Judaism, and he said, and he's telling all these jokes, and he said, so you're offended as a Jewish person? And he said, no, I'm offended as a comedian. I guess he had to be there. 312-981-7200. Fell flat on that one there. Okay, let me scratch Pope No Hell off the list. Got this new speed limit. 405 texted in Oklahoma, the speed limit is 75. Yeah. Well, Montana doesn't have a speed limit on some highways, right? I remember that was always famous. They just had none.
The interstates all were at like 70 or 75 at one time when I was growing up.
But states can set them.
Yes, states
maybe
can
Montana
adjust them.
Changed it. Maybe Montana. I remember Montana had no speed limit, and I thought they were going to lose right, federal funding if right. they didn't change things.
All right, hold on.
All right, Roger's going to look that up. Let's take a quick break. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. 720 WGN.
News, traffic, weather, sports, the Chicago conversation starts with me, Steve Cochran, every weekday morning on 720 WGN.
Free furnaces, free air conditioners.
What's this crazy talk from my husband, Dick Hochschild, owner of American Weather Makers?
I was just making the point, Elizabeth, that I hear so many ridiculous offers.
You're right. At American Weather Makers, we don't need misleading offers. We have the best service and honest pricing on the top furnace and air conditioner brands every day.
While other companies shout about low prices and free giveaways, American Weather Makers has quietly become the best heating and air conditioning value in Chicagoland.
And I love that customers trust our American Weather Makers 60-Minute Men to come to their rescue.
If your furnace or air conditioner breaks down day or night, we'll be there in 60 minutes or you get a free $60 gift card for repairs. And we never charge for travel or overtime.
You'll fall in love with American Weather Makers, too.
American Weather Makers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Call toll free
855-955-HVAC
or visit AmericanWeatherMakers.com.
Invest your tax refund in a kitchen renovation that will pay dividends for years to come. Hi, it's Tom Janke of The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showrooms with Lindsay of the Mr. Fix-It Show.
Tom, the kitchen is where people spend so much of their time.
I know, so make it incredible. Let our top designers show you our gorgeous kitchen cabinets, countertops, and flooring. We can meet any design need and budget.
And Tom, you have the best professional designers. They listen to your needs and bring your dream kitchen to life on a giant screen.
And it's all free of charge. Book a free consultation today.
Plus, you have hundreds of gorgeous granite and quartz countertops.
And we'll install them in 10 days or less with complete customer satisfaction.
The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom and Builder Supply Outlet on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview. Or The Edge on 151st Street in Orland Park.
And online at edgekitchenandbath.com.
High-end look without the high-end price.
The Edge
Kitchen and Bath Showroom.
From Builder Supply Outlet.
Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. I don't know if our texters are tired or what's going on. 765 says, Joe King Phoenix is not a correct pronunciation in any way. It's Jacqueline. Didn't I say Jacqueline?
Yeah, Jacqueline? It's Joaquin.
Joaquin?
Yeah.
Whatever. Love like you all.
Joaquin,
you are better.
And a har.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
I got it?
Yep.
What's the speed limit in Montana?
We need one of John Wells for Elif. When he asks Elif, his producer,
and she says,
she does
well,
a Siri.
John.
She does a Siri
yes,
thing.
She does the Siri.
He does the sound effect. What'd you say, Montana?
Yes.
For Montana, four cars on a rural freeway, the speed limit is 75 to 80 miles an hour. For trucks, it is 65 miles an hour.
Okay. So they did. I swear. 10 years ago or so, they didn't have a speed limit for a little while.
Hmm.
At least for a little while. Glenn is on 720 WGN. Good morning, Glenn.
Hey, good morning again. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. This whole existence about no hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're a staunch Catholic, which I used to be, I guess, not practicing. But if you deny the fact there's no hell, then you deny the fact there's no Satan, who at one time was the favorite angel of God before he got too big for his britches, which just totally takes apart the whole Catholic Church. So,
well, that's interesting.
For an atheist to say that there is no hell, that leads him open to believe that there is a God, which is against his belief as an atheist.
But the atheist wasn't the one saying there's no hell. He's asking the Pope. You know, you've told me about good. The Pope said that there is no hell. There is just a disappearance of the unrepentant soul. What do you think about that, Glenn? What do you think happens if we're bad when we die?
We go to Dubuque, Iowa.
And wait the space station?
Yeah. I don't know. There's a good or there's a bad. If the soul doesn't disappear, my feeling. If you either go to heaven or you go to hell.
Well, let's pray that neither of us find out anytime soon, Glenn. How about that? We'll look at it that way. Thank you very much for calling back. Steve from the 630 wrote back again, said the highway speed limits were changed in the 70s because of the fuel crisis. I did know that.
Yeah.
I was nailed in Nebraska in 1974 in my bet doing. I'm guessing he meant to write in my vet.
Mm-hmm.
Doing 110, 55 over the limit. He ends it with, I can't drive 55.
Yeah, it when we had to, see, I used to make the trip in about 3 hours between Chicago and Carbondale.
Ooh, like, that's supposed to be a five-hour trip, isn't it?
Yeah, now it is.
Whew, you were making some time back
we
in the day.
We were hustling, man. Oh, man, did we make good time. Because, see, we saw 70 miles an hour as a suggested speed.
Yeah.
And
it's a minimum.
And we knew where the authorities were. And especially if you go at night, there were less of them because during the day on the highway between Carbondale and Chicago, the airplanes were out. You know about that.
Oh, monitoring the speed?
Well, yeah. There are white stripes on the highways.
Yeah. I never understood that. That seems like a really expensive way to bus speed.
Well, they would. I don't think it was the actual police up in the plane. It was probably like a local farmer who had a plane.
Get out of here. You think they had farmers up?
Well, they would be paid for by the state police. And they would get a fee.
Still gotta be expensive.
And they would report down to the state police, and the state police would go to some spot on the highway and wait for you to zoom on by. But we never got caught.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I think that was more of a threat than a reality.
I don't know. But we always
I'd love to find out.
I did see planes up there.
From
time to time.
Traveling by farmland, maybe they're crop dusting.
Yeah, not traveling along the highway without spreading any dust. That's what they were doing. We watched them for long times.
We're going to need to check in with somebody on that.
But when the speed limit went down, though, to 55, oh, my God, it was so boring.
Oh, I'll bet.
Seriously boring.
312-981-7200. Mike is in Schaumburg. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Matt. Not bad. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
It's interesting that you're talking about Pope Francis right now. There's a miniseries on CNN called The Making of the Pope and How He Got His Power. And it goes back from the very beginning with the first pope who happened to be a disciple of Jesus at the time. And it goes through every Pope Benedict the Ninth was an abuser and an addict. Stuff like that.
That does sound fascinating.
It's a very interesting show.
All right, I'll look that up. Thank you.
It's on Sunday night at 8 p.m., I believe.
All right, excellent. I'm sure it's on demand as well. Mike, thank you so much for calling in. 312-981-7200 is the number. Mike or Raja, texter 417 says, nope, it was the state police. My uncle was a trooper who flew.
See, all right, so there. We just got, you can't see the markings that high up, so you know, I wasn't sure. But yeah, state police. That was the, how else are they going to, you, because the road is so flat and the area is so wide open. Where is a state police officer going to hide to clock you with a speed gun?
Oh, there's always a tree or a billboard or
something. Between here and...
It's
not like in the movies where they're hiding behind a billboard.
They can always hide behind a billboard. Now, 8-1, let's get deep again here for a second.
Okay.
8-1-5. Because
I'm looking at another story about this heaven and hell thing.
Technically, all souls disappear from this existence. Furthermore, the reference of a soul's death simply means out of the presence of God. Where that is anyone's guess. But that doesn't sound like what the Pope said. Now, this was the Pope's atheist friend writing down what he said, so who knows what he really meant. But he said disappear, as in they cease to exist. 708 writes, what about limbo? We grew up in the Catholic Church with limbo and purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
That if you were, I guess you're, well, you were bad. You weren't as bad as some people, so you're not going down there, but you're not going upstairs. You're going to hang out here for who knows how long until you earn your way up. So we grew up with limbo and purgatory. And
I heard of those.
I don't know what I don't know what the Pope says about those.
Well, I'm looking at a CBS News story out of Rome. The Vatican's denied that he told an Italian journalist that there is no hell. It was a private meeting between the Pope and Eugenio Scalfari, yep, a reporter with Italy's La Repubblica Daily. The Vatican says no quotations in the article should be considered as a faithful transcription of the Pope's word.
I just read all this.
I know.
Weren't you listening?
I was.
You weren't paying attention.
Yes, I was. Catholic Church, let's see here.
But they didn't say, the Pope didn't say that. They just said no quotations. This is just him recalling a conversation he had with the Pope, so don't quote anything here that this guy's saying the Pope said.
Exactly.
But they're not saying, and by the way, he didn't say that, trust us, there's still hell. They're just saying, hey, don't quote that, because that's, you know, not necessarily exactly what he said. He's just recounting their conversation.
And the did you have a Cardinal Vincent Nichols?
I did not. What did he say?
He said,
there's hell, and you're going to it if you press that.
Here we go. So Catholic Church doctrine confirms the existence of hell. This is the story by CBS. It states that, quote, souls of sinners descend into hell where they suffer eternal fire, according to the BBC. Boom. Then Cardinal Vincent Nichols, however, said, there's nowhere in Catholic teaching that actually says any one person is in hell. He told the BBC the Pope was exploring the imagery of hell, fire and brimstone and all of that.
You know what's funny, and I know this is a crazy correlation to make, but in some ways, and I love this Pope. This is my favorite Pope since John Paul II,
really?
When I was really young. By far.
Right.
Very progressive, bringing church into the modern day. I think we really need that in the Catholic Church. We've had a lot of down times, okay? A lot of bad scandals, sure. A lot of things like that. And we need things to be, we need to find hope in our faith, and our faith has been lacking in hope by its human leadership for a long time, I would say, my personal feeling. But I think to the old school people in Rome and in the Holy See, and all these people who've, you know, probably been there forever, this guy comes in, he says all these things. To them, it's like Donald Trump sending tweets out left and right, and then they're now, here's what he meant. He didn't mean there's no hell. He's exploring the imagery of what it really, you know, they're just trying to, no, that's not what he's saying. He's saying this, and the Pope is saying whatever he thinks. Now, are people misinterpreting it, things like that? I think there's a lot of concern about that, but this Pope has not been a, you know, 200-year-old Catholic Church Pope. He's been a 2000 and above Pope, trying to bring the church into the modern age, acknowledging science and all these other things.
Sure.
I think he's been really good for everything. Okay, 4 o'clock in the morning. Let's take a quick break. Get the news on 720 WGN. Fifty-one minutes left in the show. Matt Bubala here with you. 720 WGN. Happy Easter weekend, everybody. Happy Passover to my Jewish friends, including Roger. Did you have a Passover dinner last night?
No.
No, you have it tonight. Right?
Well, last night was the first night.
Last night was the first night.
And it runs for about 7 days. But you usually have a Seder on the first
Passover
two nights.
Passover runs 7 days?
Approximately.
I don't understand our other faiths. I don't understand my own faith most of the time. But I thought it was one night.
No.
I only know about it from the Ten Commandments.
Right. Well, and
the
blood
over
holidays,
the
Jewish holidays, start after sunset. So while if you see a regular calendar might say under Saturday, the 31st, it might say Passover.
Okay.
But in actuality, it started at sunset the night before.
Okay.
So there's the traditionally, at least, and I grew up in a Reformed Jewish family, so, you know, we were all Americanized, and we kind of did things non-traditionally.
Okay.
But we always had the first two nights of Passover, we had a Seder. And that was always at someone else's house on each night. So the first night might be at our house. Second night might be at one of my aunt and uncle's house.
Okay.
Or a friend's house.
But there's more than two nights of Passover?
Yeah. Well, because it took a while. If you remember the whole Ten Commandments thing.
Well, as I remember, well,
took a few
what? There was one night they painted the blood over the door. Those people
and then there
saved.
Was the Exodus.
That was one night.
There was the Exodus.
Okay, so we're not just counting the night that he struck them down. Then the next day the Pharaoh is upset, kicks them all out. They all leave.
And what food did they have with them? Because they had to leave in such a hurry?
Unleavened bread.
Thank you.
Hey, look at me.
Look at you.
So then they head through the desert. Then Pharaoh says, you know what? Screw that. Bring them back.
Uh-huh.
And then they chase after him.
Yeah.
Moses parts the Red Sea.
Yep. Right across.
And then as they come in, comes back. Now, for Catholics, so I grew up, you know, and we believed the story of Adam and Eve. And then as I got older, the Catholic Church started saying, well, that was kind of a parable to explain the beginning of the world. They didn't say that was fact.
Oh.
The whole crossing of the Red Sea.
Right.
In the Jewish faith, is that believed that that actually truly happened?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've had a few texters about troopers and planes. 847 says, the trooper in the plane clocked and described the car going between the stripes. He radioed the info to the car on the ground. I believe the two troopers were in the plane, one to fly and the other spotting using binoculars. And he had to use a timer, right? I mean, basically, they'd hit one stripe, you hit the timer.
Yeah,
they hit the next stripe, you hit the timer. If
and
they made it in a certain amount of time, you know they're going too fast.
But then you had to factor in how far away was the plane.
That shouldn't matter.
Yeah, but because the farther away you are, the shorter the distance between the stripes.
True. And you know,
which is why he's looking at it with the binoculars. And so you had to hold at a specific height in order to maintain the proper perspective of the distance between the two stripes.
Well, you hit it start when they hit the one stripe, you hit stop when they hit the other stripe. But that's so open for interpretation, right? I mean, how quick was your finger on the start on the timer when they hit the stripe and hit the other stripe? And I would think that in today's day and age, that if I got a ticket because of a guy in a plane hitting a stopwatch, I'd say, Your Honor, there is no veracity to the... I mean, come on. How can we say that this... technically is correct. There could be a differential of up to 7 miles an hour based on the blah, 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 blah. I think a good lawyer would get that thrown out.
A good lawyer might.
I wonder if they even do it anymore.
I don't know.
It's got to be expensive to have troopers up in planes, right?
Well, if they're...
A state that has no money for anything.
Two in the plane?
He'd say
two
one,
in the plane instead of in a car. So if you're on duty, you got plane duty and you'd rotate.
I know, but a plane has got to be more expensive to have out there than a car.
You're just paying for gas, just like in a car.
Don't you think that airplane fuel is probably more expensive? I don't think they're putting regular unleaded in there. They're not pulling up to the BP.
How long are they up there, though? How many hours are they up there?
I don't know.
Well,
when the cop is parked on the side of the road, he can turn the engine off.
Yeah. Can't do that up in a plane.
No, that goes bad. Don't do that again. That will just idle for a little bit. Yeah. Fine. 312-981-7200. Our friend Chris Gephardt is supposed to be on the phone right now. He's been so good about being on with us.
Chris.
From NASASpaceflight.com. I think he's been up late every night looking for Tiangong 1.
Yeah, he's been on spot duty.
Tiangong 1. And because of that, it's going straight to voicemail.
Uh-oh.
Maybe he's out partying, Jess. Maybe he's throwing a big Tiangong reentry party.
Maybe he's throwing a big taco
Maybe
party.
He's on his way up, because I promised him last week that if it lands in Arlington Heights, I will, not only am I buying tacos, I've got to fly him up.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be expensive.
I forgot about that. You're going to be in trouble.
What's that? Go ahead, Jess.
Maybe he's doing some cool space stuff right now.
You know, so I've been looking at NASASpaceflight.com throughout the week, as we've wondered what's going to happen with this. They're not reporting on this at all that I could find. They're reporting on real NASA stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of fascinating articles about rockets taking off and Mars rovers and this and that, but there's nothing about my Tiangong 1. So I was a little disappointed in that. However, Aerospace Corporation, aerospace.org, has a Tiangong tracker going.
Oh.
Like a whole dashboard graphics and stuff on Earth. I don't understand any of it. It's like cryptocurrency, but they're showing where Tiangong 1 currently is. Looks to me like it just went past Australia not long ago. And they have all these charts to show you how it's going to re-enter, although it looks like it's showing it over Africa. I don't understand. I don't know what they're predicting here. But their latest prediction is... where is it? They're saying around 11 a.m. Eastern on April 1st. Now, I'm going to 10:45 Mass. I'm going to be really upset if I miss it. Do you think it's going to look bad if I lean over to Colleen and say, hey, I got to go outside and look at the sky real quick, and I sneak out for a few minutes?
Well, can't you do the tracker thing on your phone and
you
follow
cannot,
it?
No, I would be better off walking out of church than pulling out my phone in church. That's a no-no.
But it's not making a noise, is it?
Roger.
Everybody else does it.
If you did that in Temple, wouldn't everybody knock you on upside the head?
Please. Half the place is sleeping.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, I mean, it's Friday night services. Mm-hmm. And when the rabbi gets to the sermon, most of the older people are kind of dozing a bit. I hate to say it, but it's true.
I understand. We had the priest at the church we've been going to, Father Caliente. What
nice
a great name for a priest.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's hot.
And he was a little hot last week. He's usually very funny. He tells great stories and kind of light and everything. But he got a little, it's Holy Week, give Holy Week to the Lord. He got a little fire and brimstone on us last week. It
Ooh.
Was fascinating. But he's like from, I don't know where he's from. He has like an Indian or Pakistani, some sort of Middle Eastern accent. So he's saying, give the Holy Week to the Lord. And the way he said it, that was mm-hmm. terrible imitation of it. But it was just funny when he gets all hot under the collar. if it's 11 Eastern, it's 10 Central, you'll be fine. It's before church. Maybe it was noon Eastern then. I don't know. I remember when I looked at it, I thought, oh, man, I'm going to be at church. That's going to give me trouble.
Well,
I really want it to be at night anyways.
You can always watch replay.
That's not the same. I want to see that thing streaking across the sky.
I know.
Wouldn't that be awesome to see?
Yeah, it would. And then sweating about how much you're going to have to spend in tacos. Because if you can watch it streaking across the sky, it might be getting close to Arlington Heights.
It might be, or maybe if I'm seeing it streaking across the sky, that means it's well past Arlington Heights.
It could be, yeah, that's true.
I would think that. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about extra innings for a minute.
Okay.
So Len Casper, who I really enjoy, as he calls the Cubs games mm-hmm. on all the various channels that they are on, he's a heavy Twitter user, and he's a good follow on Twitter. He writes a lot of interesting things, not just about sports and the Cubs, but mm-hmm. about music, things like that.
Well, he's a musician.
He is.
I think he plays, he's got a band.
He's a very fine musician. Yeah. He practices every day.
Very fine musician. Okay.
He tweeted yesterday, so on Friday, like during the day, I think on the Tigers opening day, they went 12 innings.
Okay.
And he said, 12 inning games in April make no sense. You're just hurting the bullpens. You're hurting these teams. They need to just call it a tie and let it go. And I tweeted back at him and said, Len, the Major League Baseball is going crazy trying to speed up these games because they think kids won't watch. You think people are going to go for just, it's a tie and walk away?
Yeah.
And then the Cubs go 17 innings that night.
17 innings, yeah.
And so I could see what he's saying. But I think that if they ever called a game in a tie, that would be so frustrating. I know they have 162 games. And he said, hey, 12th inning, nobody was there. People didn't care. People mm-hmm. had left. But by that logic, the Dodgers should start every game in the second inning because nobody's there, right? I mean,
nobody gets there till second or third inning.
It doesn't
nobody
make
shows
any
up.
Sense to just say, oh, you know, nobody cares anymore. So let's just, that could affect the standings at the end of the year. It could affect all sorts of things.
I don't think it's the Dodgers. I don't think it's because nobody cares. I think it's just because they're fashionably late.
Well, traffic,
out there.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's horrible traffic.
But that's a sign of not caring very much if you're not there for first pitch. But what would you like to see? I mean, do you care? I enjoy a 17-inning game, and I know that's frustrating for the team and the bullpen and everything else, but I would not want to see them call it a tie, and I certainly don't want to see, and I believe they're trying this out in some of the minor leagues this year. When we play travel baseball, things like that, mm-hmm. they often, if it's extra innings, they'll go into what they'll call California rules, which is some variation of you start with a runner on second base.
Right.
The last out from the previous inning starts on second base. And maybe every batter starts with one ball and one strike already in the count,
mm-hmm.
trying to speed things up. I would hate if baseball did that. I mean, they might as well go to, if you're going to go extra innings, let's figure out a shootout form of that. Why don't we just go to home run derby? Somebody comes up three pitches from a coach,
mm-hmm.
and if they, you know, see how many they knock out. And let's just go to, that's the MLB shootout, is just quick round of home run derby for a tie game.
Interesting.
It'd be more fun.
Yeah.
Be better than a tie.
But then if you start having ties, how do you figure out the end of the season? What if they're contending?
You can't have ties.
You know,
You just keep playing. It's baseball, for God's sakes. It's worked for 100 years. Why are we changing it?
And I think there's something that they're missing. And we were watching it here while the Hawks were playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tenseness of the tie. In other words, anything could happen that would let one team win over the other. And obviously you want your team to win, and you're disheartened when the other team wins. But throughout the later innings, the Cubs had men on first and third, couldn't get runners across. The pitching was fantastic by the Cubs against the Marlins, and Marlins didn't get anything going until the 17th inning when Cubs had to make a switch, and our top reliever kind of wore down after seven innings. So, but it's that excitement. It's like this duel,
yeah,
that you're just waiting for just that one little crack, and for one of the teams to win. It's there. I felt, at least, I don't know how anyone else feels about it, I felt a tenseness as it continued. Did we say, oh my God, now it's the 16th inning, now it's the... Yeah, we did. But it was the frustration of, oh, we had men on first and third and one out and we couldn't get anyone in. What's going on with the... You get invested in it. And I think that's okay for baseball.
I think that's okay, too. And I know they think, oh, the games are too long, the kids aren't watching this and that. Listen, as long as these players are making $25 million a year, the top players, then baseball's doing okay. And I'm not going to... I don't understand this alarm bell they're sounding off about, we've got to increase play time, we got to do this, we got to do that to attract these kids. If they're making this much money, something is working pretty well. When they start cutting back on salaries completely, I'll understand their worry. But right now, they must be doing relatively okay. And if you're so worried about the speed of the game because you think it impacts people watching, then why are playoff games going 4.5 freaking hours? They take the playoff games, allow these 5-minute commercial breaks between innings, and a regular 9-inning game that should take 3 hours or 2 hours and 50 minutes literally is taking 4 hours. That's when everybody would tune in, maybe. The casual fan might watch some playoff baseball, but they're not going to stay up till midnight to see the outcome of a game. If they need to speed something up, do it then.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, and I haven't been to a game in a couple of years because of the cost. But when I would go to a baseball game in the park, let's forget about the TV coverage being too long. All right, forget about that, because the TV coverage goes as long as the game goes, actually. So if you're at the stadium, you're seeing it in real time. I never went to a baseball game thinking, oh, I hope this thing is over by 2:15. I got to be somewhere. I never thought that. I always knew, because I watched the clock out in center field and on the scoreboard, I always knew that if there was the 1:20 start, which there always was when I was young, if there was a 1:20 start, this I could get on the L by, oh, maybe 3:30, 3:45. I knew that.
The games are going that fast back then?
Yeah. At a decent game, sure.
That's quick. I agree. I don't think anybody generally goes to the games thinking they better get these 9 innings in quick.
Exactly.
Either you're going and you're staying, or you're thinking, yeah, we'll leave around the 7th inning. And
right.
It doesn't matter
and
how fast or slow the game is going to you in that much. You've decided I'm cool with leaving early.
Yeah, and the main decision to leave early is because, what do you think the main reason would be?
Beat the traffic, generally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not because I got an appointment, but oh, I don't want to be stuck in traffic for an extra hour and a half.
Yeah, especially at a place like Wrigley, where it can be very difficult, especially on a 1:20 game on a weekday, where now it's getting out in rush hour traffic, too. So,
yeah.
Texter says rock, paper, scissors. Let's just go rock, paper, scissors for extra innings.
There you go.
I like Home Run Derby a little better because at least it's baseball.
And because there used to be a show called Home Run Derby?
I remember seeing the black and white Home Run Derby. Yeah,
they got a bunch of those on YouTube.
Surprised they don't bring that back. I guess these players make too much. They don't want to do that.
Look
at Giancarlo Stanton. Or no, it was Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge was killing the ball, hitting all these home runs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then plays in that home run derby, hits a million home runs, has a terrible second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I don't want Rizzo. I don't want Chris Bryant. I don't want any of our guys. I don't want Contreras. God knows I don't want Javi Baez in any home run derby.
Yeah, they'll probably twist something.
They should stay.
Did you see the swing that Baez took? Was it today or yesterday?
I saw it on opening day, or I saw it last opening. Night. Opening day, there was a later, in like the fifth or sixth inning, I went to a bar with a buddy. We watched the first six innings of the game. He has this great at-bat. There's two guys on. There's two outs. He has a great at-bat. He goes 0-2 in the count, and then he fouls off a bunch of pitches. He takes some tough pitches, and then he strikes out, spinning out of his shoes and his helmet falling off.
Yep, down to his knees.
When all you needed was to put the damn ball in play and maybe get these runs in. And he's such an incredible fielder, and he could be such a great hitter, but he just drives you insane.
Yeah.
Just like, dude, lay off a little bit on that one. How about some contact? 312-981-7200. 309 says, it is the commercial time that makes my TV watching or listening to baseball less enjoyable. Too long, I'm telling you. That's the truth. All right, news is next, 720 WGN. Mike, stay right there. We'll get you after the news. It's 4:30 in the morning. Let's get the news now with Roger Badish. Happy Easter, happy Passover, everybody. Matt Bravalo with you here, 720 WGN. Texter says, hey, Matt, always enjoy the show. Wish Orion a happy birthday from the audience. Is it Big O's birthday?
I don't know.
We will have to wish him a happy birthday. And if it's not, we'll just say, well, we're just early.
We hear a rumor. Can you set us straight?
Is it true that you're turning 45 this year? Oh,
39. Jack Benny, always 39.
312-981-7200. Mike is on the line. Hey, Mike, how are you this morning?
We're fine, Matt, and you and Roger. Hope you guys are having a good morning.
We seem to be.
Okay. Hey, you got to let the games play out, first of all.
I agree. You can't end it early. We can't go shootout or any NHL thing on this. It's baseball. There's too much history. And I know things have changed over the years in this way and that way, but come on.
Mm-hmm. Hey, when I work overtime, we have to work till the job's done. You know, there's no tie in.
Well, now let's not tell the players that, because the players might go, well, wait a minute. When Mike works overtime, Mike gets time and a half.
Well, I think I'd rather have their pay than time and a half.
Well, I think they would agree with that, but I think they'd also say they deserve time and a half too. And the owners would then say, we're going to have ties.
Okay. But coming back to the home run derby that Roger brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that used to be on a television station that the signal's not any longer around, and it used to be on Sunday evenings for about 2 hours.
What was it on, 44?
No, it was called The Works. It was Channel 40. It was called The Works.
40, wow.
Yeah, and then they switched to Comet, but they played some of the worst movies on that station that I've ever seen.
Isn't it funny that, Mike, in the days now of like 5,000 channels on your television, there are channels like that. We watched, I'd never seen before, but I guess we get the Paramount Network. Paramount, you know, the movie company has a network. And they did a miniseries earlier this year that I talked about called Waco. And it was all about what happened in Waco years ago. And it was fascinating. It was a 6-part miniseries. It was really, 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 really good. And one night I missed it. So I wanted to tape it on a replay. So I'm searching through the guide on when it's going to play again. So I'm searching Paramount. And, like, they have this one show on at night. And then everything else was, like, god-awful old movies that they were rerunning. Like, terrible, terrible shows. I was just like, oh, man. I understand why they needed one good show to get people to find out about this. But now there's nothing to keep you around.
Well, they had shows like The Incredible Two-Headed Transplant, you know, Rosie Grier and Framaland. There was actually two movies about head transplants, The Man with Two Heads.
I don't think I've seen either of them.
Oh, well, you don't want to. Okay. I mean, you get a good laugh. But anyway, this home run derby, when they played it, I mean, they had the likes of Harmon Killebrew, Ernie Banks, Mickey Mantle.
And where did they film it at? Because I remember seeing the field. It was not like a professional ballpark. Was it some minor league park? Because it was like a big park, but it didn't have like bleachers in the outfield, I want to say, right?
No, it looked like it was in some, actually it looked like it was in some suburban neighborhood, someone's backyard, because, you know, it was really quiet, you didn't hear any traffic.
But it was huge. I mean, it was 300-foot fences, it had to be, right?
Yeah, but it looked like it just had a dugout where they had, you know, the announcer talked with the players, who seemed like they were down home. You know, the way they talked, you got to know the players.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's kind of neat to see. And I don't know if the players would go for something like that nowadays.
With how much they're making and how much the teams invest in them, I'm sure the teams would be like, we don't want you doing that. We don't want you pulling a muscle. We don't want you jerking your swing around and screwing it up. I think it would be tough to get everybody to go along with it.
Just like the NBA, they don't want you to play any pickup games because you know what happens.
Well, that I can understand. I mean, in the NBA, you know, I mean, those injuries happen so easily when they're jumping and running around doing that stuff. You can kind of understand that. Home run derby, nobody, you'd think, well, who's going to hurt themselves in home run derby? I mean, you could pull something. I think more would be throwing your swing off from trying to hit home runs all the time instead of just doing your natural swing, you know?
Or you could fall down the stairs carrying a suitcase like Carl Boozer did.
We could do that. That's true. Allegedly. Mike, thanks so much for calling in. Have a great weekend, buddy.
You do the same. Have a nice Easter.
Thank you. You too. 312-981-7200.
Yeah, I got a little home run derby for you here.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
The world of sports, we bring you Home Run Derby, where each week the leading home run hitters of the major leagues will compete in a home run hitting contest. You'll meet such stars as Duke Snyder, Eddie Matthews, Rocky Colavito, Ernie Banks, Mickey Mantle, Henry Aaron, Harmon Killebrew, Willie Mays, and many others.
Well, they really built up the names because he started out slow there. I was thinking, ooh,
well,
he didn't
get
anybody good.
I'm Mark Scott. Today on Home Run Derby, Mickey Mantle, last week's winner, will meet one of the outstanding sluggers of the National League, Ernie Banks. Ooh. Let's meet them, shall we?
How about that, huh?
Mickey Mantle and Ernie Banks.
Yeah, and he picks his mic up.
Well, come on in,
fellas. And walks to the field.
Good seeing you again, Mickey.
Thank you, Mark.
Ernie, welcome to Home Run Derby.
Thank you.
You fellas know each other, having appeared on opposite sides in several Major League All-Star games. Now, fellas, today you're going for the big money. The winner will receive
$2,000.
The loser, $1,000. As an additional bonus, anytime either one of you hits three consecutive home runs, you'll receive a bonus of $500.
This is why they did it back then.
Well, yeah.
Imagine what they'd have to pay now. For one home run, you get $1 million.
Is worth $1,000. Now, you'll play nine innings, and you'll each have
well, there's a whole game right there, nine innings.
Any ball not hit out of the ballpark in fair territory is an out. You don't have to swing at every pitch. But if the ball is in the strike zone and you don't swing at it, that also constitutes an out. Head umpire Art Passarella will call the strikes.
And Art just waves at him.
Wow.
Hey, how you doing?
It's either home run or nothing.
That's right, Ernie.
That's Ernie.
It has to go out of the ballpark in fair territory. Now, fellas, the pitchers are out there to throw the ball over the plate. They're batting practice pitchers, and they'll work every other inning. Now, I'd like to say this, Mickey. As
pitcher.
A defending champion, you'll bat last. Ernie, that means that you'll bat first. So good luck to both of you.
Good luck, Ernie. Thank you. Good luck.
Yeah, you couldn't,
we'll start
you couldn't get that going today,
no.
I don't think.
No.
But that's neat that they did that.
Yeah, and probably. It was a, let's see here, it was a half-hour program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you get nine innings in half an hour, though.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
sure it was
editing. Involved.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and commercial breaks and stuff. So Ernie's up first. Oh, and Mickey gets to provide some commentary.
Oh, well, that's good.
Outside pitch. All right, never mind.
By the way, we heard from upstairs, it is O's birthday today.
It is?
It is. Did you get him something?
Did I get him something?
Yeah, it was your job. I got the pizza. You got to get O's gift.
I got him a hearty, how do you do? That's not going to work, is it?
Yeah, that's not good.
Well, I'm going to say, how does it feel to be 39?
Now, that's a suck-up move, sure. Not a gift.
That's a good gift.
Jess says we'll sing. I don't think that's a gift at all.
No.
That would be a punishment.
He is out in Arizona.
Yeah. So that's our excuse. We had something great, but it won't keep, so we'll just eat it or something.
You tell them then.
The mail won't get there quite in time.
Yeah, right. I don't what do you get the man who has everything?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll wish him a happy birthday coming up here in 18 minutes. So I was mentioning earlier to our Twins guest that there is a show on Netflix, Roger, called Mindhunter. A friend of ours told us about it last week. We tried it out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three episodes in. I don't know if there's only been one season or two. But it's set in like the 70s, and it's about FBI agents trying to move the FBI into more of a thinking about psychology of killers. Manson, other people that were serial killers or thrill killers, instead of just catch them and get them and throw them in jail and not care, figure out why they did what they did, and do we see patterns? Can we prevent these type of things in the future?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty fascinating so far. It's a little raunchy. It's not for the kids.
Oh.
But it's pretty interesting, and I don't know. I have to read up how much based in fact it is or not. But it's been really good through a few episodes. So give that a shot if you guys are looking for something to watch this weekend. And Roseanne. Roseanne's seminal TV show returned, as most TV shows suddenly are, reboot. But this is the most successful reboot I think there's been ever. 18 million people watched Roseanne's show this week, which 20 years ago would have been a decent number, but right now is a ginormous number for broadcast television because everything is so divided up these days. You don't get 18 million people outside of maybe award shows or Super Bowls or things like that. And Roseanne in the show voted for Trump. They made that, and I didn't see the episode. This is only what I've read about. I still need to go back and watch it. But she voted for Trump, and her and Jackie, her sister, have a big falling out because of that. And so it deals with politics a little bit. And Roseanne's been making the rounds. I know she was on Jimmy Kimmel, and he said something about Trump. And she said, do you want Pence to be the president? He'd be a million times worse, so just shut up already. But it sounds like Roseanne is in actuality a supporter of President Trump. And it's very interesting because she's been so out of the limelight forever. I mean, really forever. And now that she's back in, especially controversially here a little bit with support for the president, who is definitely not getting a lot of support, certainly among the Hollywood people these days, there's been a couple of very interesting things. One is, I noticed, so I didn't see the first episode, but when I was on Facebook and Twitter that night, I was noticing how my conservative friends were all going on and on about how excited they were about Roseanne, and, oh, this is so great, and I'll watch again. And it was just funny because it was my friends who normally would be complaining, the same friends who just 2 weeks earlier were really bitching and moaning about the Academy Awards. And how political it was, and it's ridiculous, and you're turning off your audience. Now, they were very excited about this show.
Right, which was being very political.
Not because of that, but because they like the politics of it. If the people on the Academy Awards would have been supportive of President Trump, they wouldn't have been complaining about them talking about politics. It's because you want to hear your own views being, you know, getting support. And if you are a fan of President Trump, you get annoyed when he gets vilified, but you like when he gets praised or when somebody supports your beliefs, no matter what your beliefs are, whether they're religious, political. We like validation, right? We like people who like the things we like and believe in the things we believe in. And what else this has caused for Roseanne is a lot of backlash about her beliefs and about her. And so, I mean, it's a crazy thing. She's been out of the limelight for so long that now that she's back, she's going to see everything that she has done in the past come back to light. And so I'm seeing a lot of posts about Roseanne. One is, so she tweeted a lot of really nasty stuff about Hillary Clinton that I guess she's deleted as she's making her public rounds right now. But people have screenshots of all these things, of course. And I think a bunch of tweets about pedophilia ring and, you know, alleging the Clintons were involved in things that, you know, get alleged by people really, 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 really far on the right. A lot of, you know, crazy, crazy out there stuff. Somebody reprinted an article that Roseanne had at one point accused her parents of molestation.
I remember that.
Tore her family apart and then went on Oprah and said, I think I made that up in therapy. I just wanted to drop a bomb on my family. Mm. Her and her sister were estranged for 12 years by it. Mm-hmm. And then she said, I think I made it up. It was crazy. And that's neither here nor there. That's just wow.
Yeah.
Roseanne tweeted this week about how President Trump has saved all these people stuck in sex trafficking. And he's saving more every day. I don't know where that's coming from. And that's coming from another article I read from some really underground crazy stuff that's out there. So Roseanne is not only supporting President Trump, which is fine. That's her absolute right to do. But it sounds like also fringe out there elements like 9/11 craziness stuff that maybe you believe in, maybe you don't. Not saying mm-hmm. she's talking about 9/11, but just really out there
conspiracy
stuff,
theory
really
type
conspiracy
stuff.
Conspiracy craziness.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see if the show keeps doing well. And if it's written well, I think whether it's making fun of Trump or praising Trump, I think there's an audience for that. Now, people say that this is validation, that there's conservative viewers and they need to be served. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just it was a really good show. And if this is written well, I think that's okay if it supports Trump. Because, you know, within context, there are, we know that there's 50 million people who support Trump and voted for him. And there
sure.
are, we need to see probably more stuff where there is a supporter of Trump, as long as, and hopefully a good dialogue about the two sides and what they believe in and don't believe. And I think Roseanne herself has said, we need to have these conversations and be able to have them. Then she went and tweeted something crazy. So I don't know where the whole Roseanne thing is going, but it's going to be very interesting to see, how she handles being back in the limelight. Because don't forget, the interesting thing about the conservative side just rallying to Roseanne is I bet that when she sang that national anthem, they weren't all supportive of Roseanne. Let's not forget she desecrated yeah. on purpose the national anthem at one time. And guys are kneeling and not getting jobs. But she sang vilely our national anthem and then spit afterwards and like grabbed her cry. I mean, just made a mockery of it. And she was being funny. She thought it was, you know, playing up baseball and humor and I can't sing and all that stuff. But it was the type of thing that if somebody did today, the right would just castrate them for sure. And she did that back then and people were very upset with her back then. But now she's supporting President Trump, and they all love her to death. So it will be very interesting to see how that goes for her in the coming weeks. 708 says, there's a book called Mindhunter by John Douglas. He was one of the men that started the psychological profiling program. The book is outstanding. Filling the show with softcore porn is unnecessary. Okay, so 708 is writing, that's the book that this show is based on. When he says filling it with softcore porn is unnecessary, because the guy's dating somebody and they're showing some sex scenes. So that's what I'm saying. It's not for the kids. They're not showing a ton, but they're showing enough.
Right.
That when you're watching it with your 16-year-old son, it gets a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And Kelly says, can we fast forward this?
And by doing that, thusly, let your 16-year-old son know that there's something that he probably will want to see.
Well,
in another
I mean, he had
year
already
so.
Seen it. He had already
well,
seen it.
Well, all right.
So that is what it is.
Yeah.
We have one more quick comment on Home Run Derby, I believe. It's Ron. Hey, Ron, how are you this morning? Did I do that wrong? Ron, there you are, sir. Hey, how are you?
Oh, he's breaking up.
Hello, Ron. Well, I think Tiangong 1 might be re-entering the atmosphere and breaking up the satellite signals.
Oops.
That could be happening, everybody. Stay tuned. 312-981-7222.
You are just going to like start the biggest worldwide scare with you and
nobody's this, paying attention to this. You said Patty hadn't even heard of it. It's crazy. There is a 9-ton space station going to re-enter the atmosphere.
And burn up.
Mostly. Not necessarily all of it.
Into
think
little,
about it.
Little pieces.
When we talked to Chris Gebhardt from NASA Spaceflight.com last weekend, what did he say? He said, possibly like a 200-pound piece would survive. 200 pounds coming in from space at 200 miles an hour, Roger. Do the math.
That's like it's me falling good. Through the atmosphere.
At 200 miles an hour.
Real fast.
That's a lot.
Yes.
From 60,000 feet up. Think about that.
I wonder how much, what is the effect of the impact? I know we're not math geniuses here.
A 200-pound piece of engine at
200
miles
an hour over a distance of.
You got to think, if that hits a house, that house is gone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I know they said, what did you had in the news earlier, like 1 in a trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds of it, but it's 1 in a trillion as it enters the atmosphere. If it hits in the Midwest, the odds of it hitting someone get a lot smaller than 1 in a trillion.
Yeah, but you got to understand, there's a lot of farmland in the Midwest, too.
There is
more open land in the Midwest than there is urban land.
Of course. But there's also lots of people. And if it gets, like our prediction, Arlington Heights, there's a lot of people in Arlington
Heights.
True. Other than the racetrack, not a lot of open land.
God, wouldn't it be something if it landed right in the middle of the racetrack?
That would be pretty cool.
Jeez.
It'd be very fortunate, too.
Yeah.
Scare the horses, though.
Yeah. Maybe Mr. Deschiswaz should take out a real quick insurance policy.
He should put a bullseye out there.
Yeah. have a viewing party, a watch
maybe
party.
Maybe let me bring the taco truck out there and we do a live show next week in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
That'd be easier for people to get to.
We do a live broadcast. We've always been wanting to do a live broadcast.
We always have.
Yeah.
I suggested, by the way, to Steve Bertrand this week that I host one of his Bertrand travel tours.
And?
Next summer, we do a fan, because I want to take my family to Europe next summer.
Right.
Okay. And I want to do, Steve does these things all the time.
Sure.
And I said, why don't we do one for families? Families with kids, grandparents with kids, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you've always done these adult trips, but I'll bring my kids along. We'll bring other kids and we'll see Europe for kids, for teenagers.
Yeah.
Didn't text me back.
Don't.
So I guess I'm not good enough to lead a Bertrand travel tour, apparently. Thanks, Steve.
Jeez. Who's your friend?
Apparently we know where Steve draws the line and who at WGN can host one of his travel tours.
He likes Brian Noonan.
Yeah. Noonan can go. Andre can go. Judy can go. John can go.
Yeah.
Anybody
Lou,
else here?
Did Lou go?
I'm sure Lou did.
Did Lou take one of them?
Of course he did. Quick break and then we'll say hello to the birthday boy next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you saying goodbye, farewell, and heidi ho, and happy birthday to our dear friend Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Big O.
Well, good morning to you, and thank you for the greeting. It was 84 years ago today at 10 p.m. that I arrived on the planet in a blinding snowstorm in Wisconsin. The doctor couldn't even get to the farm. So a lady who was a friend of ours delivered me, and I made it, and I've been making it ever since.
A March 31st blinding snowstorm in Wisconsin, huh?
Yep, it was. They got about 12 inches of snow.
Holy
and, of course,
cow.
They didn't have the snow removal equipment at the time. So I missed April Fool's Day by 2 hours, but I did make it before March was finished, and so been having fun ever since.
Man, 84 years ago, the things that you have seen change in our world in your lifetime, it's crazy to think about.
You know, when I look at the cell phone, I remember what we had on the farm. We had a six-party party line, and it was a hand-cranked telephone on the wall, and our ring was three longs and two shorts. So when that rang on our telephone on the wall, we picked it up and said hello. And I think the other five people picked it up and listened in, or rubbernecked, as we called it then. And
so I'm bad at the math here, Orion. So you were born in what year then?
1934.
Yep. So GN had been on the air for 10 years already.
Right.
And television was out, but extremely uncommon, or not even out yet?
Not even out yet.
Not
we first
out.
Got television, I think. Well, I first saw television in 1948.
48? Wow.
Yep. First time. And it was a round tube screen and black and white only, of course.
Man.
So.
That's
so, yeah, I have seen a few changes. I've gone from a 1937 Ford that was our first family car to a little different. And, of course, airplanes. They were around, but certainly I didn't fly a commercial airline until, I think, 1956. So it's been an exciting time, continues to be exciting, and, of course, as Steve Cochran likes to say, I came to WGN before he was born, and so I've enjoyed 57, going on 58 years at WGN.
That's incredible. What are we doing? Anything? Are you and Gloria heading out today? What are you guys doing for the big day?
Well, my family is here. My son, David, and his wife, Carla, and my daughter, Catherine, and so we went to dinner last night. under a full desert moon in the most beautiful outdoor restaurant patio in the valley. It's our favorite. We've been going to it for years. So we had a great dinner last night and a great night in good weather. Temperature for Easter Sunday is probably going to be 90 degrees out here. So,
well, that's better than it's going to be here. Oh, I know that 90 is a little hot already for you guys, but it's going to be pretty chilly here.
Yeah, the locals are complaining.
Are they? Well, it's going to be really chilly here for Easter. It's not going to be a good spring Easter. Well,
my family will be heading back today because they're missing the winter weather. So.
I'm sure they can't wait to get home to it.